C6. Number 15A.
So, let me read you just one after the other. Strong sense of refuting error with your spiritual understanding. She says here, that which heals is what? Correcting the mistake. Now, dispute the symptoms with science. Agree to disagree. Meet disease with powerful mental opposition. Blot out images of disease. Rise in rebellion against disease. Make your own terms with disease. Meet disease with mental negation. Shut out unhealthy thoughts. Do not admit bodily conditions. Do not talk about the condition. Argue against sickness. Do not regard disease as a reality. Efface from mind disease. Make no unnecessary inquiries relative to disease. Make no discouraging remark. Not to draw unfavorable attention to symptoms. Avoid speaking aloud the name of disease. Abandon mortal beliefs. Eradicate the image of disease. Can you hear them? All about disease, and they all have the same tone. Isn't it terrific? See, there is no tone in it as we had in prayer or in Atonement Eucharist or in marriage or in spiritualism. In no other chapter you had all these attitudes that say, well, how do you deal with disease? How do you heal? Here at this point we really have that wonderful sense of life and soul that says, that which is, that is. And so stick to that. And refute everything that does not correspond with that. Refute the error. Refute the images of disease. Refute talking about disease. Refute, refute, refute. Yes? Is it nice? I think it's terrific. Shall we epitomize it? You see, we had those two classes, one that said, trust entirely in God, and the other side was, therefore, refute everything that is not God-like. So they have the same tone, you see. They are only the two sides of the same coin. If we trust fully in God, if we have full spiritual understanding of God, then naturally we will reject everything that is not God-like in our thoughts. These two go together. And that's those two points which we had here, namely refuting error. But how on earth can we refute error? Therefore, the first is that we have spiritual understanding, trust in God, faith in God. So, shall we put down as Romans 3, we can perhaps write down, refuting error with faith in truth. Refuting error with faith in truth. We could, yeah. We could just as well have said refuting error with spiritual understanding. You see, the terms really do not matter. I repeat that and I repeat that because I know that one has been educated too long in just investigating terms and terms and terms till the letter has become more important than the tone. But what we need is tonality. We need tones, not letters. The letters are only here, words are only here to symbolize tones. Words are only symbols, they are not the thing itself. Whereas with tones we come much nearer to the reality itself, that which is real and not just a symbol. Yes. So, the fourth part, and we are very eager to think what comes now. See? After we have first seen in the first part that we need that tenderness, that sympathy, that warm-heartedness to heal, then that warm-heartedness must not be just a sugary sense of warm-heartedness, but it must rely and be based on the truth of being, that the second part, the truth that we have to know, and healed by the truth, and then the third part, to stick by what is, to stick by what is, and refute all that which is not. And you can easily see what must come next if we refute all that which is not, and trust wholeheartedly that which is. We find out that actually only that which is, and that the other is not. That disease is not. And here, for the first time, we come to the point where we find out that disease is not. The realization that there is no disease. In this fourth part, we have that expressed very distinctly. Here she would show that believing in God, or understanding God, or trusting God, whatever we had before, that believing in God means that there is no disease. She shows here there is no death. She says here there is no disease. Disease was not there. You remember at the end of the court case when that liver complaint was before the court of spirit, that the judgment was and disease was not there. That's the first time she says that at this point. Disease was not there. There was no sickness before the tribunal of spirit. So here we could perhaps summarize it and say Romans 4, the realization that there is no disease. It's the realization that there is no disease. She also says here in this same part, she says that we must make disease unreal to the patient. See, it's no more destroying disease and healing disease, but that we must make it unreal to the patient, so that the patient himself will say, there is no disease. Disease is not there. That's exactly as saying, I'm healed. Therefore, that whole chapter really is built up in a way to come to the realization that there is no disease to be healed. That disease is not there, and that all there was a belief about disease. And that what had to be healed was the belief in disease, and not disease itself. She says here, you must realize that the power of divine love meets disease, and mortal mind must be instructed by truth. Yes. Okay, that's the fourth chapter. I don't think that we can easily summarize those four parts into one. I think it's much clearer if we keep it apart. But now we would have to see what is the vertical, what is the common denominator running through all the four chapters. And in order to do that, we just perhaps refresh our thought and just run through those four chapters and try to see if we can see somehow this common denominator in creation. She started out with that she said that the basis of healing is what? A divine principle, a perfect principle, and a perfect idea. That in perfect principle and in perfect idea, there is no creation of disease. All right, if that is so, then chapter 10 asks us and shows us that the idea, that perfect idea, of which is the basis of all healing. See, in creation we had that the basis of healing is a perfect principle, perfect idea. Now comes the question, how do we know, how can we know this perfect idea? And she says, you can learn it from principle. And so Jesus instructed the disciples how to heal. And we had there that the scientific idea of healing can be learned and that it can be understood by everyone. So once we have seen that it can be learned and understood by everyone, actually no, she didn't say by everyone, but she only said that it can be learned and understood, the next chapter comes and says, and it really should be understood by everyone, that all should be really healers, just as the disciples were healed, and as Jesus asked the 70 and the 12 and all the world to be healers, we must see that everyone can really be a healer, but how? Only through the Christian qualities, through the Christian spirit, can we heal. When we have that Christian spirit, you see, then the 12th chapter starts, and starts with that Christian spirit. And it shows that the practitioner in the first part is a practitioner who has that Christian spirit, who has that loving affection that only sees perfection everywhere. That goes out right from the point that one sees from the point of view of love, only the idea of love and nothing else. Therefore, in the second part, one can establish in the minds of the patient the truth about the patient. Not the truth about the disease, but the truth about the patient, and so establish the truth in the minds of the patient. And in giving that treatment, you see, that part is really treatment. In giving that treatment, the practitioner has to show forth that quality of the third part of unyielding trust in what he has been seen in his treatment. So that third part fortifies, so to say, the second part, and says that what the second part has seen and understood as truth about the case, that is the truth, and I stick to it. I'm not going to let myself be sidetracked by any other suggestion. And if we see that only that which we see as the truth of the case is of the nature of isness, then the fourth part says, well, then there is only isness, then disease cannot be there. And we get the realization that there is no disease. Isn't that a nice flow? And in that whole flow, you see, we hardly had any more what we had in the second column, that truth heals through mind. It was all showing that we have to lift up the whole case, everything that seems to be of the nature of disease, and lift it out of the testimony of being disease. Into what? Into the perfect principle and perfect idea. That instead of disease, we have to see all through just one thing, namely the idea that is behind it. So Christianity, which has that great office of lifting everything out of the wrong concept and lifting it up into the idea is shown here. I don't know if the epitome would be right. You can put it down with a little question mark, just as I do it always when I'm not quite sure. But it seems as if this whole third column would show what? Lifting healing into perfect principle. Lifting healing into perfect principle and perfect idea. Lifting healing into perfect principle and perfect idea. So that's the third column. It is always there where we take any appearance of disease and any symptoms of disease and lift it out of disease and say, no, disease is not the reality, it's not there. What is there? There is only idea, perfect idea. That's Christianity. And you see again, the focal point is on idea. We go on to the next chapter, teaching Christian Science. Teaching Christian Science. Interestingly enough, again here, though it is a very short chapter, and though it has to do with teaching, and therefore humanly we would not expect that she would tell us a lot about healing here, she speaks a lot about healing. The chapter is just full of references on healing. But one can see that here she tackles the question of healing quite differently than in the 12th chapter. That teaching must be by healing and healing by teaching. And here we have actually something quite extraordinary, namely that she does not ask what is a practitioner, what are the qualities of a practitioner that enables him to heal, but here it is what qualifies a scientist to heal. What makes up the quality of a scientist so that he can heal? And therefore we will find here very different attitudes, different qualities that are necessary than in the 12th chapter on practice. We can separate those many references here perhaps in two series. Again, one positive, one negative. The one positive, I could say, what qualifies a scientist to heal? And the other one would be that frail mortals, the non-scientists, cannot heal, and what qualifies them as being non-scientists. Let me take me first, what qualifies a scientist to heal. And here we get at once an interesting remark or statement that she says reading science and health is necessary in order to be able to heal. Isn't it terrific? Can you see the 12th chapter? What enables a practitioner to heal? Those wonderful, tender qualities of loving affection. Here, what qualifies a scientist to be a scientist, and therefore a scientist that solves problems, it is that he says, well, he must read the textbook. He must read Science and Health. He must get familiar with the science of it. Can you see the difference between both heal, you see? The one is the Christian healer and the one is the scientific healer. The Christian healer, he cultures very much those warm, nice, affectionate qualities. The scientific healer, he wants to know what is the science of the textbook. She goes on and says that which qualifies a scientist to heal is abiding strictly by the teachings of Christian Science. Can you hear again the difference? By the teaching. Not like we had it in the 12th chapter, by trusting God. That was the practitioner's attitude, the 12th chapter. Do you get the difference? He says, that which enables you to become a scientist to heal is that he abides strictly by the teachings of Christian Science, by adhering strictly to the rules of Christian Science, again by the rules, not by faith and trust in God. That was the 12th chapter. Then naturally she talks that that which is healing is the ethics of Christian Science, of which we have been talking about already before. The ethics of Christian Science, and what does she understand under that ethics of Christian Science? And I just read you a few examples of it. That which heals is the ethics of Christian Science, that all is mine, my world, that all is mine. So that which really heals is that ethics which says, I'm always going out from mine. I'm going to do exactly what mine tells me. And I don't care tuppence or 2p's now. I don't care tuppence, you know, what anybody thinks about it or feels I should do or tells me to do, or how he has healed, or how he has had an experience. The only way of healing is I go out from mine every time anew. All is mine. To be honest, she says, is the ethics. Fidelity, a high sense of moral and spiritual qualification, right acting, right doing heals. To be right oneself, can you hear right? It's learning and studying the textbook. It's seeing the teaching of the textbook. To stick to that textbook through hell and high water. To go always out from that textbook, from that one mind. And to be right in that. To be right oneself. To utilize the moral might of mind, the moral might of mind, not the moral mind of an ethical code, of a moral code. Golly, this 13th chapter, you know, once a student, when we were discussing this chapter at home, and saw the absolute beauty of that 13th chapter as we have never seen it before, student said, I'm going to write an article on it. And when we were feeling, yes, that would be wonderful, and we saw the consequences of writing it, we felt, we don't have the courage to do it. It upsets the old moral standard so much that we felt, let's wait a little bit. But you start thinking that out, you know. Start thinking that out, that this is the ethics that all is mine, that therefore every action is an action of mine, and that therefore that action cannot be judged by any ethical or moral code. What the Christian Science should do and shouldn't do. What is a good Christian Scientist and what is not a good Christian Scientist. Nobody can tell that from the outside, and can only tell it from asking, from where did he go out? What is his origin? From where did he reason it out? And only that qualifies us to be a scientist. In contrast to that, she now shows what are the unethical scientists, and that doesn't heal. Now you can see, I read you a few unethical qualities, and you will agree with me that these are considered ethical in the world. But in Christian Science, they are unethical. Recourse to other healing methods is unethical. Doubting trust is unethical. It doesn't make a scientist. Has anybody been ever punished or ostracized in the society because he didn't have trust, full trust in God? No. He's quite in honor. By the smatterers of Christian Science, this is unethical. Just to be a smatterer in Christian Science. By human opinions, have you ever seen anybody being ostracized and called unethical and immoral because he had human opinions? But in science, this is unethical. Going out from a material standpoint, she says, does not heal. Has anybody ever been punished or ostracized in the world because he was not going out from a material standpoint? Is anybody going out from a material standpoint be considered to be immoral in the world? No. Huh? Can you see just with these few examples what this 13th chapter implies? It implies really that kind of manhood that Jesus had, that he just didn't care about anybody's opinion about the scribes. He said, you say this and this and this, but I say unto you this and this and this. The very opposite. He brought in a completely new worldview, a completely new world, Weltanschauung, absolutely different, and so introduced that caliber of a scientist that incorporates, that represents the healing science. Yes. Well, how shall we epitomize this, like this? We could say, what qualifies a scientist to heal? Question mark. The answer is strictly abiding by the rules and ethics of Christian Science.